This is a Glass Box Media Podcast.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we talk to well-known guests about their lives, their careers, and those difficult moments along the way. I'm Giles Paley-Phillips, and with me is Tim Daly.
Hello, hello, hello. Giles Paley-Phillips, how are you?
All right. You said you are, like I'd slightly forgotten who I was.
You had a dramatic pause.
Yeah,
dramatic pause, and I liked it. It built a bit of tension.
Yeah, because I didn't know what I was going to say next, basically.
But you know, sometimes I think that adds to pods and
what silence.
Yeah, silence.
Yeah.
Should we do a silent episode at one point? Just no audio whatsoever.
Well, not even
apart from right at the end, just like saying "don't get cancelled." That's it.
Yeah. Well, an hour. But we'd have to do it. We'd have to actually record it though, so we'd have to just sit in silence.
Yeah.
Yeah. That.
And then, do you think people would keep listening right to the end?
I think one or two might.
Yeah, I think they might.
We'd be interested to see the numbers. Because if they were good numbers, if still like several thousand people every week, like listen to just silence, then mate, it'd be an
easy life, wouldn't it?
We'd just stop doing it.
We would, because we'd miss out on great chats, which we have this week, don't we, with the wonderful Tom Chapman. So I think we'll probably stick to our regular format.
Yeah, we don't want to mix it up too much now. We're too long in the tooth
to do something, exactly.
Something as avant-garde as having a silent podcast.
I don't think we're very avant-garde, are we? I wouldn't say that's not a category we'd be in.
Yeah, we're meat and potatoes, mate. Meat and potatoes.
We are. Yeah, we're porridge.
We're what? Porridge?
Yeah, we're porridge. We're healthy. We fill you up. We're good for the start of the day. We last a while. You know, we'll give you energy for the day. And we're cheap.
We're cheap as chips.
Yeah,
but a bag of old oats.
Yeah, and a bit of water or milk if you're feeling fancy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we're more water than milk, mate.
We're the porridge of the podcast, but we're podcast porridge.
Yeah, yeah. Who isn't? Someone who isn't podcast porridge is our brilliant guest this week, Tom Chapman, who is an international.
He's Rice Krispies.
Yeah, he's mate. He's fucking Frosties.
No. He's like you're going to go to Waitrose and you get like six quid granola. That's what he is.
Yeah, he's like the top notch granola.
Yeah,
an internationally renowned barber who kind of started his career working in Tony and Guy's, trained there, and then opened his own salon and has been literally all around the world doing live. I mean, I didn't even know this was a thing, like live hair events where he's doing like live haircuts on stage to like hundreds and thousands of people, which, you know, we talked about on the pod because he was in a band and like played in bands for years and kind of always dreamt of being kind of a being a rock star or being a full-time musician, playing in front of thousands and thousands of people, but ended up doing that cutting hair.
He became a rock star hairdresser.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
So he still got there. He still achieved his dream, just ever so slightly differently, but still got that rock star profile.
Yeah, exactly. And the amazing thing as well, what he's done is with the Lions Barbers, which he's set up, is that it's a not for profit. So the barbers obviously get paid, and then all the profits above that go to mental health charities. And that's a big thing we talked about on the pod, was the work he does for his own mental health charity, and sort of trying to get people in the beauty industry to be more aware of mental health, and because they're having these conversations with people during treatments, and a lot of the time they are sort of taking on some very, very heartbreaking stories.
Yeah, it's an important, never really thought of it like that before. And Tom's really brilliant at talking about it on this pod and on his pod, of course. Those live haircuts, like to thousands of people, be really awkward if you're the person getting your haircut on stage, and then they showed you the mirror and said, "What do you think?" And you hated it, and then 100,000 people have to watch you really awkwardly say, "Oh yeah, it's great," when you actually hate your haircut. That it's bad enough when you're the only person in the chair. Imagine doing that to 100,000 people.
I'd be horrendous, mate. Horrendous. Yes. Yeah, I can't imagine it. Like, it's bad enough being in the barbers and they show you the mirror and you're like, I mean, I have to admit, I don't think I've ever sort of, I've never complained about a haircut. I mean, I did get my hair bleached once in a hairdresser's, and it was just orange. And then I had to go back the next day and they had to do it again.
You have to do it quite a few times for it to...
Yeah, because I don't know about you, but I've actually got, not anymore, because obviously my hair is grey, but back in the day when I had colour in my hair, it was, they said there was quite a lot of red pigment, natural red pigment in my hair, which meant the bleach and peroxide didn't take as well, which is why...
Quite dark.
That's the bullshit they gave me anyway.
Yeah, that sounds like an excuse to me.
Yeah.
I was quite dark, so I had to do it like 3 or 4 times, and it would go orange, and then it would go sort of like peroxide-y. Of course, I asked Tom about this. So, I did ask him as well. I think about what to do if you hate your haircut. I've always wanted to ask a barber. So basically, what I'm saying is we cover all sorts of bases with Tom today.
We do.
It's a wide ranging episode.
Yeah, and Tom's just a lovely bloke, isn't he? Just a really nice guy. And we also talked about WWE. He's a big wrestling fan, and has always been a big wrestling fan. And you know, I'm always intrigued about the whole wrestling thing, because obviously, you know, the guys that do it are athletes, but then there's the kind of it's slightly choreographed, and then there's storylines and stuff. And I'm always interested that people are really into it because of that aspect to it. You know, the fact that it is this kind of choreographed, predetermined kind of thing is always interesting. Because imagine like the sports, you know, like you and I, like, well, football in particular, if that was kind of predetermined. It's quite a weird concept almost, isn't it? But I mean, obviously wrestling's always been that way, particularly the wrestling stuff.
It's interesting talking to you about that. Not really a world that I am much knowledgeable about, but interesting talking to him about it, and hearing the passion he has for wrestling, clearly. So if you're a fan of wrestling, then you'll like this episode as well, because Tom clearly is as well. And a lot of time was spent talking about Big Daddy and the Ilk and all them guys.
And a Big Daddy, yeah, Jesus. And Giant Haystacks. And I mean, some of the British wrestlers were not as athletic as their American counterparts. No. I mean, there was a lot of darts player energy about them.
Yeah. But I think, to be honest, that is quite British.
Yeah.
Leaning into the British side of it.
we do it slightly differently over in these shores.
Yeah, we do. But what we don't do differently from each week, Giles, is this podcast. So shall we? Should we do tweets, or should we go straight into it and do tweets later? Seeing as we're mixing things up this week.
I don't mind. Have you got a tweet ready then?
I've got a tweet. Yeah, I do.
Well, let's do it now, seeing as we've bastardized this bit of the podcast.
Ian Williams is the tweeter. Hello, Ian.
Hi, Ian.
Another amazing guest, John Simpson. last week's guest. Oh, what brilliant. A guest that was.
Oh, I've had loads of comments from people, actually, about that.
Oh, it was so, he was so good. Yeah. Ask him on again, says Ian. Maybe we'll at some point. I'm sure he was threatened by Bin Laden. Let's be honest, out of all our guests to be threatened by Bin Laden, I'd say John's probably the most likely.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, obviously read that tweet and was thinking if there are any other guests that may have been in a position to be threatened.
I know that Bin Laden was a big Arsenal fan, wasn't he? So maybe Gary Lineker, as he's played for Spurs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the North London divide. Yeah, could be.
Anyway, a great run of guests. At this rate, you'll be interviewing God for the 200th. Oh, and then he's put asterisk, and by asterisk, put Robbie Fowler instead of God.
Oh, wow.
Robbie Fowler would be a great guest. I'd happily have him on.
Yeah, I wouldn't have sort of said he was godlike, but...
Liverpool fans used to call him God.
Yeah, of course they did, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was a very good player. Let's put the feelers out for... and then, actually, if we do get Robbie for 200, then we can say we've interviewed God. So, yeah. Actually, for a 200th guest, I think that's a very good booking, actually.
Yeah, we just...
We'll
title it as that.
Yeah. Yeah, God on the 200th episode. And we weren't lying. We weren't lying. Technically, we were correct. Well, we've got a week, I think. So, I think this is 199, isn't it? Is it 199?
That's the price of some of our merchandise, which you can get from
podcastmerch.co.uk. Yes, this is Pod 199. Wow. So we better get onto the phone to God pretty quickly.
Yeah, the Obamas haven't called back.
They haven't yet. We'll save them for 300.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of Pod 199, oh my God. This is the guest of Pod 199, Blank Podcast 199. It's the one and only Tom Chapman. On the Blank Podcast, 199.
Tom Chapman, thank you so much for being on the Blank Podcast. It's taken us a while to get here, but I'm really glad that we are. I know you're a busy, busy man. Now... Am I right in thinking are you born and bred Torquay?
No, I'm not.
You're not? Okay, no. So that's misinformation to start with, isn't it?
It's a
good start.
It's a great start. I deliberately do this now because I come up with the wrong information because then someone can put me right. So where did you grow up then?
Well, I was born in Maidstone,
okay,
in Kent. I was there until
I'm a Kent. I'm a Kent boy as well.
Oh God!
The other side.
He's gonna be going on about Tunbridge Wells now.
Near Tunbridge Wells. Yeah. Wells. I'm West Kent. So hang on. Are you man of Kent or Kentish man?
Oh God! Don't ask me that. My granddad would be very disappointed that I don't know that.
I don't know either. Just pick one.
Well, whatever I fancy. I was born in Mason in Kent. I lived there until I was 10. And then moved to the Isle of Man, and I was in the Isle of Man until I was 15, and then we moved to Devon. So I think I counted it the other day. I think I went to about 10 different schools.
Oh, wow. So you moved around a lot. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that was including sort of a couple of primary schools, middle school, a couple of high schools, and then sixth form somewhere else.
So did you find it, I was going to say, when you move around that much, did you find it sort of difficult to make long-lasting friendships?
Yeah, look, I think it's, I got used to... ending relationships, I suppose, and moving on. And back then, there wasn't a social media platform that you could get in contact or stay in touch with people. There wasn't even mobile phones, I think, the first few of them. So, yeah, well, actually, all of them. I don't think I got my first mobile phone until I was in sixth form. So, yeah, I wouldn't have lost contact with a lot of people. But I think it kind of helped me in the sense of getting used to new experiences and engaging with new people, and I wasn't scared to put myself out there. I moved around with my parents. We got a very close family. I spent a lot of time with family. My mum and dad were very entrepreneurial, did lots of different things. They started off in food. It was sort of catering and restaurants and a sandwich bar, and then went to Isle of Man. They had a restaurant, and then some guy, but we moved to Isle of Man. We had this old mill. They turned into a restaurant. There was a back room and all the stuff in the mill. My dad was like, well, put it out in the back room. We'll open up like a brick and brack shop. and some guy came in, asked looking for props for a film, and he ended up driving on the films. Then he ended up going, I reckon I can do this. So he started a transport company, and then I spent a lot of time on film sets from the age of sort of,
wow,
I don't know, 11 to 15, working night shoots, and you know, met some pretty cool people. I mean, there wasn't the celebrity culture that there is now, but you know, Stephen Fry, Sybil from 40 Towers, what was her name? Mickey Rourke.
Prunella Scales.
That's it, Prunella Scales, yeah. That was one of my highlights because I got her to sign my old 40 Towers VHS.
Amazing. Oh, VHS, nice.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was cool. But, yeah, then we moved to Devon, and they did lots of different things here as well, from women's fashion stores to restaurants to all sorts of stuff. So I think I kind of got inspired by them a little bit throughout my life. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Going back, do you remember Friends Reunited? That's what popped up in my head when you were talking about
God,
like connecting to old friends.
God, there'd be people listening going, "What the fuck's Friends Reunited?" Basically, kids that are listening, that's what Facebook's become. Basically,
it was like Facebook, wasn't it before Facebook?
Yeah. It was weird. Friends Reunited.
Wasn't that before MySpace as well?
I think you're right.
Was it a similar sort of time?
Maybe same era, but could have been before. Mm. Yeah.
I remember joining Friends Reunited, and there was like, I think there was only like two people from my year on it. And they were like probably two people that I never, ever spoke to ever, but still reached out to them, you know. Do you remember me? Never heard back.
Oh, dear.
Oh my God, you got blanked on Friends Reunited. Yeah. Oh, that's so depressing. Oh, man, yeah. God, if anyone you really think about when you got, because I got my first mobile phone, I think at 15, maybe. So I would have been in like year 10. Is that year 10?
What was Jim, what was your first? I was intrigued to know what people's first mobile phones were.
So mine was, you know, the 3210s or the Nokia 3210s or the 3310s.
Oh, you were straight in with a Nokia?
No, I had one before. I had something before that. Like when I was before that, which didn't have Snake, which was so annoying because everyone else had it at school. Mm. But then when I went to university, I then got a 3310. So, but it does make you sort of date yourself, doesn't it? Makes you realise.
Yeah.
How old we are, how much we've seen in terms of technology.
Remember a time before the internet? Which seems mad now, doesn't it? Like you think, oh, God, do you remember when we didn't use computers?
Peaceful.
Yeah.
The problem is we're contactable constantly, aren't we? We are, if you wanted to, you could be online, replying to emails, responding to messages. The points of contact were unreal. I mean, when I was, my first phone was a BT Cellnet phone, which had WAP on it.
WAP,
which was the first type of internet kind of, you could, it was like teletext, wasn't it? You could get the football scores and the news highlights.
There's nothing to do with Lizo either, just to confirm to anyone.
So WAP, I do vaguely remember that.
Was it wireless access something? Or point, I think it was. Wireless access point. Yeah. Not the new upgraded WAP. you couldn't get any of that on it.
No.
you definitely couldn't get any of that. Do you remember as well, and this has become such like an old fogies internet podcast, but do you remember when you first got the internet, obviously because it was like through the phone line, you'd have the dial-up sound. I think, and obviously like if someone wanted to use the phone, they couldn't, and then they'd have to bump you off the internet, and it was really annoying. But I wonder if that got you into like a mind space of like, right, I'm going on the internet now. Rather than, as you say now, like we're just contactable all the time. That I think it is a bit overwhelming. Whereas then you're like, okay, I've probably got half an hour to go on the internet.
Yeah.
Look at one website and maybe look at one email and then go. Whereas now, because it's 24/7, it's overpowered. I don't know. Maybe that's an older person thing. Maybe younger people are better with it. But I don't know. Maybe it's just having been brought up without it. It now makes it all overwhelming.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I think there's definitely something in having scheduling time for things like that. I've got much better at that, I must say, in the last couple of years. I am working until 5:30 and then I am stopping. I am not looking at text messages. I'm not, people can wait. I mean, I think I was watching an interview. I mean, one of my biggest things that I love watching is wrestling, but I was watching an interview of a wrestler the other day, and he was saying that all the younger guys in the locker room are on their phones. They got vlogs, they got social media posts on this all the time. And he says he reads books and he doesn't. And he said that something really interesting. He said the average tweet is thought about for about 5 seconds before it's posted. But if you're reading a book, it's been written, it could be weeks and months and years, could be a life's work. It's been scrutinized, checked, all the facts are right, correct, everything, because basically the publisher don't want to get sued, I'd imagine. But it is proper content that's validated, as opposed to a tweet or a post that's been thought about for 5 seconds, mostly put out because we feel like we've got to be putting something out there. Mm-hmm. And even with, I was talking to my dad about it recently, about the transfer window with the football. It's back when I was younger, you'd get the newspaper, nick my dad's newspaper, to see the back of the newspaper, to see what gossip is going on. Whereas now it's just consistent nonsense posted out about this person may have spoken to this person, and this my source says this. And it's just, we need constant content to fill up the never-ending barrage of information that we're taking in, and how much of it is even validated or correct or anything.
You might see one tweet in a day that maybe is useful or resonates with you.
Well, and also,
but think of the rubbish you've seen shifted through to get to that.
Well,
one.
And also, a lot of tweets lots of posts are reactive to something, so they're like kind of almost, there might be gut reactions to stuff, and then they end up being kind of visceral or angry. That's why I guess why we see a lot more angry stuff come out, because people are reacting to something they don't like. We don't tend to react to things we like as much, maybe.
No, it's like TripAdvisor and things like that. It's like, if you had a bad meal, you're going to go on there and go, I'm going to show them how bad this was. I'm going to teach them for giving me a cold whatever. But, if it's really good, you'll go away and go, no, it's really nice in there. But you don't take the time to go out and praise them. And I think that's a big issue. Also, I think that things like Twitter is a very vocal minority, isn't it? It's not... most people, it's only reacting to maybe the football or reacting to something they're watching. Again, I like wrestling. So you see the vocal minority on there that piss and moan and complain about something, very angrily. But a majority of people watching it probably just watch it and enjoy it and go on with their lives.
Yeah.
I heard something really interesting about this the other day. So I was listening to a podcast called The Coming Storm, which is a BBC podcast about the...
Oh, that's great. I've listened to some of that.
Yeah, it's about the US elections in... Well, it's about everything. It's about QAnon and all this.
It's a lot about QAnon, isn't it? Yeah.
It's really interesting.
The Proud Boys and all that. It's mad.
Yeah, and how it affected the 2016 election in the States and how it continues to do it now. And it's really fascinating. But there was something in there that some... It was a lot of it's about conspiracy theories and about how conspiracy theories happen, how people get drawn into them. Talked a lot about Hillary Clinton conspiracy in the 90s and how they've fed into this bigger culture now. But someone said something about, and I'm going to butcher this and get it completely wrong, but something about that people need to feed into conspiracy theories because the world is confusing. And actually trying to get your head around the reality of life is actually, it's too much. So you feed into conspiracy theory because it's a simplified way of like answering the world's questions, and it makes it easier for us to understand. And I thought about football in that way as well, because I thought about why people say like, that ref's against us, the ref's biased, all this kind of stuff. Well, they're not. They're obviously not. But the reality is your team's not very good. Or actually, there's a million variables in football. Yeah. Okay, my team's not very good. And that is factual, given our current form. But there are so many variables in football that impact a game or a moment. It's easier to just say the ref's against us than it is to actually take in the almost overwhelming, overriding variables.
Yeah, people like black and white, don't they? And I think that's I think that's why the right gets further right, the left gets further left, because it's easier to, I'm right, you're wrong. So that's much easier, isn't it? I believe in this, therefore I'm right, and you don't, therefore you're wrong. There's less middle ground where you go, well, actually, I can kind of get that point of view, but I don't really agree with this. And I think it's much, I think religions and all that sort of stuff, that if you can relate to something and it makes you feel like you're the good versus evil, isn't it? The ref's the bad guy. He's wrong, we're right. And I think that's much easier for us to comprehend, and people, it makes you feel better if they're wrong and you're right. But I think it's a shame, because I think there is so much debate and there is so much conversation that can be had around so many different things. No matter who that person is, there's probably good and bad things about everybody, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And we're human at the end of the day. And like, you know, like you say with the referee, there's a human being at the end of the day. And they, we're not saying that they don't make mistakes. Obviously, a lot of refs do make mistakes. But
that's why we got VAR, though.
Exactly. Yeah, that's such a brilliant
system. That's just so they can make more mistakes. They can make more mistakes on TV more often. But let's not get into that, because honestly, that is such a shit show at the moment. Oh, God. But it creates debate. It creates conversation.
Which is what, actually, if you actually, to be honest, if you think about actually what the governing bodies of football, they it gets people watching.
It does.
Yeah.
And talking. But I know, obviously, I mean, and Charles, obviously, you're best mates with the Lino, so I know that you're a bit more pro officials.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, yeah. Well, now that I know one.
Yeah. Now you're on that side of the game.
Yeah, I know what it's. Oh, yeah, the pressure. God. It's true. Tell us about the wrestling. Have you always been into wrestling?
Yeah. Massively. Love the wrestling. I was. There's pictures of me and my brother, young boys with face paint on, like the Ultimate Warrior, and you know, I've got I had all the figures and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's always been a big. Yeah, I think when there's so much content out there now, and there's so much stuff to watch, and there's so much, and for me, I don't spend that much time actually sitting down and watching anything apart from the wrestling. That's my 2 hours on a Thursday morning and 1 hour on a Saturday morning. I sit and I watch it, and it's kind of a bit of escapism. Mm-hmm. You know, jump back to childhood. I'm genuinely emotionally invested in it. I think it's just, you know, good storytelling. It's something that I've always enjoyed, and they're there to entertain me. You know, that's their job. You know, when you think about, you know, I used to be so obsessed with football, and you know, you get in a mood if they don't win or they perform in bad. Well, I think they don't give a toss about me. They don't care. It's a job, you know. But, you know, they're not there to entertain us. And even I used to watch a lot of UFC and I used to do a lot of MMA style, you know, Muay Thai and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and that. And you can be hyped up for a match and it lasts like 20 seconds. And you think, that was it. You know, that was worth the 50 quid we just spent on that or whatever it was, you know. So, yeah, the wrestling's just been something that's always caught my imagination, and it's something that I'm, yeah. And if you find a friend or somebody who likes wrestling, it's like an instant bond as well, because there's not many grown men that admit to liking it as well. So
you're in good company, because I watched a podcast recently with Rick Rubin, who I'm a massive fan of, the you know, world-renowned producer, and his big thing is watching WWE. Like he loves wrestling, and you wouldn't, like, obviously look at, he's like an old hippie guy, like you wouldn't like imagine that his escapism is watching wrestling. But it does seem to be quite a few people are really, really into it. Actually, lots of people in the music industry are really into wrestling.
Yeah, I think it kind of links into, I mean, the music scene has always been quite closely to it. It's been a lot of like metal and alternative bands that have been used for the theme songs and you know, the bands and all that sort of stuff. So I think it's kind of a alternative scene anyway. I think if you go to a wrestling show, the crowd are normally, it's not the cool thing to like, is it? I think it's kind of, there was a period, I suppose, in the Attitude Era with Stone Cold and The Rock and all of that, where it became very sort of mainstream and had huge viewing figures and that for a while. But I think that was because it was sort of pushing boundaries and a bit out there. But it's been one of the things that's always kind of been there as a constant for me. I mean, I did have loads and loads of figures, and my mum and dad, when they moved house, said, yeah, I'm sure we got them all in the attic, but they're all gone somewhere. God knows where. That's the only one I've got left is this like original WCW one of Sting, which doesn't move.
It's just literally, it's just
classic old school.
Brilliant. Did you have all the ring and everything then?
Yeah, with multiple rings and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, you spend hours, used to get in trouble for body slamming my brother through my dad's bed and all that. Wrestling was always banned. Yeah, always banned. But yeah, it's one of those things that's just been a consistent. And I think that I've done a few things. I've been to a few different wrestling shows. I've actually cut a few wrestlers' hair before, sort of reached out to them online and I said, you know, they're somewhere. Can I come and cut your hair? And there was a couple. There was a tag team called the American Wolves, and they came over to the UK to do a show in Iowa. Reached out to them on Twitter, went and cut their hair, and then when they were recording for a company called TNA Wrestling, which was filmed in Universal Studios in Florida in one of the sound stages. And they, I just said, oh, I'm coming over. Is there any chance that you're going to be there filming? Which they were. So I got to go into one of the sound stages and I cut their hair outside in Universal Studios and met a load of wrestlers. Yeah, like even, you know, remember the Hardy Brothers?
Yeah, the Hardy Boys.
Yeah, met Matt Hardy and that, which was a bit of a fanboy moment and just pretty cool just being backstage with all these wrestlers just walking around.
That's amazing, man. That's so cool.
That's really cool. I'm on eBay because there's lots of wrestling figures on eBay. So I was in a similar position. I had a lot of like football figurines when I was younger, like the Corinthians with the big heads.
Big heads, yeah.
And they all went as well. But I've started buying a few on it. I bought a Baggio one. A Baggio one last week.
With a little ponytail.
Yeah. Yes.
Bring that back. That'd suit you, actually.
I tried it when I was 10. And funny enough, it did not suit me. But maybe now. Well, maybe
people think you're Stig of the Damp or something if you got that.
Oh, my God. We're really aging ourselves this episode, aren't we? Anyway, there's loads on eBay if you fancy having a look for, you know, for getting the collection back together. I Googled Ultimate Warrior. And, the face paint is so good. And then in my head, at the Leisure Centre in Edenbridge, because I wasn't really into wrestling, but it was always there. There was a presence of wrestling, I think, in this would be like the 90s. There was a cardboard cutout, I think, of Big Daddy. I think I got that right.
We used to watch
British
that.
Wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. I used to watch that with my granddad. We watched the Saturday.
Yeah, ITV World of Sport.
Yeah, exactly.
Really? And yeah. I probably did actually. This is the thing. Like, I wasn't into it, but clearly, it was around and it's like sort of like seeped into my memory.
Giant haystacks and Big Daddy and Kendo Nagasaki, wasn't it? Was the mysterious kind of God? I'm aging myself now. Yeah, that was great. But that, again, it was, Big Daddy used to just come in and hit people with his stomach.
What an athlete.
Yeah, I know.
In wrestling, I mean, you get these guys, there was a guy called Sandman in ECW, and he used to come down drinking beer, big beer belly, smoking a fag, down through the crowd, smash people over the head with a kendo stick, and he was like a hero, you know? And there's no other sport you can get away with that, is there really?
Yeah, he's representing the working man.
Maybe darts.
Yeah.
But to be fair, like the real, I mean, obviously, like the WWE guys, and obviously before that WWF, those guys really put in time and dedication to, you know, to getting their physiques in shape and stuff. And there is an extraordinary amount of athleticism in you know, although there is the storytelling aspect of wrestling, those guys do brutal stuff to their bodies.
Oh yeah, honestly, like there's so many sad stories about, you know, a lot of the guys that were around in the 90s, early 2000s, a lot of them had died or, you know, really bad ways. So, you know, put themselves through. I mean, in WWE, the schedule is incredible. 300 nights a year on the road, taking bumps, chucking yourself around, you know, working injured because they've just got to. They've got to carry on. And, yeah, they don't get paid anywhere near the amount of money that professional athletes get paid anywhere else. And, you know, they do put themselves through a lot, and it is a, you know, it's choreographed, it's storylined, it's a, you know, and people, you know, I know it's fake, I know it's not, you know, real competitive sport, but yeah, you go and watch Lord of the Rings isn't real, you know, whatever, you know, Last of Us isn't real, it's not real with everyone, you know, I know it's not real, but it's entertaining, and they're doing all their own stunts, and they work together so well, look after each other's bodies, and try and keep themselves fit and healthy, and continue to entertain. They do it for the fans, you know. I think there's a respect there, I think, for me as a fan, just, yeah, the work they do. I listen to some of the wrestling books on audio, you know, and the stories and stuff they go through, and, you know, pretty shit lifestyle on the road, driving for hours for £100 for a night's work, and then driving back, didn't even pay for the fuel, and trying to get their way to the top, and very few of them actually really make it. But there's a bit of a resurgence in the wrestling industry at the moment. Yeah. There's loads of different, like, sporting, it's like AEW now, WWE. You've got some loads of big, bigger companies in the UK now, like Progress, giving people places to work. So I think the internet, if we go back to that, has done wonders for the wrestling world, because they can all, I mean, they're all storytellers, all putting their own content out there and keeping it interesting, I suppose.
You just described stand-up comedy. Driving for hours for 100 quid a night. I mean, that's basically the same thing.
Lucky you got your quid, mate.
Yeah, the only difference is I don't jump off the stage and have somebody pound my body, but it does feel like it some nights, to be honest.
But you do keep yourself trim.
So but I keep myself trim. Yeah, exactly. And I work out a lot. I really don't.
Make sure you're cardio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I've got to walk from one side of the stage to the other.
Yeah, I got my intro music.
Got to hold a mic. Yeah. Up above the strings.
Mic. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I take my top off. People are really impressed. So actually, there are lots of similarities.
Yeah. You need the face paint now.
Oh, that's the way.
You know what? That would actually be a really good idea, because my theory with stand-up, I guess, like any sort of stage entertainment, is leave people remembering you. So obviously, if you do a good set, great. But like normally, it's like wear a flowery shirt, do what Milton Jones does and like stick his hair up and stuff. If you came on with face paint, people would remember you.
Or even...
That'd be really good.
Next level, dude. Like Mexican wrestler.
Yeah, like, luchador.
With a cape and stuff.
Nacho Libre.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Check out, there's a wrestler called Danhausen, and he wears face paint, and his whole comedy shtick thing. He's like the number one selling merch guy at the moment this year, and he hasn't even hardly had any matches, but his sort of gimmick is that he is very nice, very evil, and he's kind of like based off the old sort of horror movies. And if you just googled him you've seen his face paint.
If people it's like say Kit, it's not like he's in Kiss.
Yeah, if people say to him, so how do you get your face like that? He said, oh, just a little bit of red under the eyes. Yeah, all the rest is natural. So yeah, he's actually quite funny. He's very funny. Yeah,
that's cool, man.
That's really cool. Yeah, really cool.
So you were saying about your parents being entrepreneurial, and obviously you've started your own business. What led you to doing the barber stuff? Was that something you did from an early age? What when did you kind of get into doing, you know, the hairdressing and?
The hairdressing and barbering, that came about because I was very much into music, and the music scene very much influenced your style, the way you looked. I was alternative music, so it was everything from mohawks to long hair to the emo sweeps to the shaved heads. And
I had the emo sweep.
I had an emo sweep as well.
Good stuff. Yeah, the MySpace days. I had pink pigtails at one point just to piss off all the chavvy lads at school. But it was a case of I was doing my A-levels and I was going to go to university and study ancient history and Egyptology, because that was an interesting thing. I thought, you know, if I'm going to do it, I might as well do something I'm interested in. And my mum sort of said, why are you going to go to uni? What's the point? You know, you're not going to be the next Indiana Jones. She said, why don't you do hair? Because I'd been doing my own hair, my mate's hair. It never even occurred to me that's something I could do. I went to sixth form, told my tutors that that's what I was going to do. I was going to finish my A-levels, but I was going to do that. And they all said they were disappointed in me. Like, why would you not go to uni? Why would you? Yeah, because I think hairdressing is seen as something you do if you can't do anything else. So I'm just a hairdresser. I'm just a barber. You're not academic, so go and be that. But it was one of the best things I could have ever done, really. I went into it, started at Tony and Guy when I was 18. I was finishing my A-levels Monday to Friday, volunteered at Tony and Guy on a Saturday, and on a Sunday I worked at Woodlands Leisure Park for a whopping £2.10 an hour.
Wow.
Good times. And I think that was got my foot in the door, and it was something that I loved doing. But my dream was to be in a band. I was a front man for many bands at the same time. So for the first sort of like, well, up until, so probably the first 10 years of my hair career, I loved cutting hair. It was my job. It enabled me to have a job where I could have tattoos and a pink Mohican, and it was fine. Yeah. It was acceptable, you know. But in my spare time, I was in bands, dreaming of doing that, and, you know, traveling, just trying to get a gig. We had a couple of occasions where we had conversations with record labels. But that never happened for whatever reason. And when the last band kind of split up, I decided to focus on the industry a bit more and open my first shop. And then off it went. And I ended up being on stage cutting hair in front of far more people than I ever would have been playing music, the sort of music I was playing, you know.
Crazy, isn't it? Like, well, I know we've talked about this before, Tom. Like, we've, you know, kind of parallel existences a little bit, doing work and like kind of, you know, obviously you were doing hairdressing. I did loads of retail jobs while I was, you know, trying to make it in a band. And yeah, we got close a few times, but it's a great time, and I you know, have fond memories of it. But it's funny how like your success or your career moves in a different way than you kind of imagined at the time, and you end up kind of being in situations where you kind of thought you would be with like your music, for example. You know, like you say, being on stage in front of hundreds of people, thousands of people, doing something that, you know, obviously you love, but it was not the thing that you probably foresaw you doing.
I mean, look, being on stage, cutting hair, I mean, it's literally like a pop concert, but with me cutting hair on stage, which is fucking weird for anyone who's not in the hair industry, but you know, being enough, Sydney, Australia, 2,500-3,000 people watching, massive LED screens wrapped around, big
cameras. So, what are these competitions?
So at that point, I was a global barber director, which basically meant that I was working with a cosmetic company, creating content, you know, the photo shoots for the promotional stuff, product development, creating education, and then going around and delivering it and launching products in different countries, you know, from Brazil to Lithuania, Australia, Canada, all across America, Hawaii, went to Hawaii to cut hair, which was pretty cool. So yeah, I mean, I've done me good to go out there, you know, enabled me to travel the world and experience something that I would love to have experienced with music, but in a different world.
I think you have to be open to these things, don't you, as well? Like, we all have like things we want to do, and life takes us in different places. And I've changed my career, God, so many times over the last decade or so. But I think if you're just open to trying stuff, then you will end up in situations like that. It might not be what your plan was. But I think if you're the sort of person that's like, okay, I'll try this and say yes, then inevitably you will have adventures. And it clearly sounds like you've had, you know, a lifetime's worth.
Plenty of adventures. Yeah, I think it's very, it is important. I used to say yes to absolutely everything, but I think it's also important to start to learn to say no to stuff as well, you know. You know, because I think that's, you start saying yes to everything and you end up burnt out and you're just doing too much. And there's definitely an element of exhaustion from doing those things. You know, people, it looks fantastic, like you're in Brazil cutting hair and everyone's like, wow, that's amazing, it's so glamorous. But the fact it took me, I had to do 3 indirect flights to get there, 18 hours of flying, get there, you're just about like surviving anyway, and then you've got to go on stage and do an event, and then you're there for 3 days, then you've got to fly all the way back again. You're not on holiday as such. And I think that's I suppose same as if you're a touring band or whatever, it's exhausting. It is a lot of work, and it's lonely as well. You know, you're by yourself a lot of time, and I still do that. I still spend a lot of time in hotels and working away, and you know, the glamorous life of being in a travel lodge or a Premier Inn or whatever. And I think that can take an effect for sure.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Life's a balance, isn't it? So I think it's. And I don't know if it's age, like the older you get, the better you are at saying no. Maybe your self-value, self-worth goes up a little bit, so you're better at knowing how to look after yourself, whether things are worth taking. I'm trying to get better at that, but it is hard. Certainly if you're a freelancer, you feel like you should be saying yes to everything, and everything's an opportunity and don't turn it down, but you will burn out and you will start to be unhappy. And I think for me, happiness comes from balance. Happiness comes from validation and feeling like I'm doing something worthwhile, feeling appreciated and balanced, you know, having a happy home life, having seeing my kids playing football, all those things. It's a balancing up, isn't it? Rather than one thing in particular. Really quickly though, seeing as you are professional in the industry, can I ask you a direct question about my hair? Only because
you should get the Baggio ponytail. Yes.
Oh my God, that is so tempting. Can you buy clip-ons? You must be able to buy clip-ons.
You probably can, yeah, definitely.
I might do that. I'll wear it to little kickers. The dads would love that. I really want to dye my hair blonde, but everyone, apart from my hairdresser, says no. And I think he's only saying yes to humour me.
Why not? It grows back and cut it off. I mean, who cares?
Thank you. That's exactly what I think.
To be honest, I think I said that to you as well, mate. And I'm not a professional.
Oh, did you? Hairdresser. Okay. Thank you. No, you're not. Everyone's been saying to me, but you look so much older. I'm like, yeah, but I am old. Like, just.
I don't think you look older.
I mean, like, yeah.
Good. Okay, good. Thank you. Professional validation. Professional tick. I will I'll take that.
So
that's made my day.
So, Tom, you obviously you sort of alluded to that. Do you find those moments, like you say, when you're on your own and stuff, do you find those tricky? Like, are they challenging sometimes when you're just, you know, like, I can imagine, I mean, I've been in those situations as well, when you're sort of on your own in a hotel room and, you know, you're away from your natural environment. Do you find those times kind of challenging?
I think the hotel rooms become my natural environment, but you know, it's a, yeah, but it's a funny one because I mean, when I stopped after the lockdowns, I didn't want to go and do the traveling barber director thing anymore. I didn't want to have to do that. Lockdown was lovely because I was at home. I mean, don't get me wrong, it wasn't, you know, all roses, but it was lovely being at home. I put my boys to bed every night. I spent time with the family, and I focused on the charity side of things a lot more. And I was able to work online and do that stuff and write book and all that kind of thing that I was able to do. Whereas when I was traveling away, and even now I'm traveling a lot, but I'm mostly in the UK now, which is much nicer because if anything happens, I can get home very quickly what have you. But it is, you know, being, I never sleep well in hotel rooms. You know, I go to bed, when I'm at home, I go to bed at like 8:30, 9:00, and I get up at like 5:00 and I go to the gym. That's kind of like, if I'm in a hotel room, it's, you know, I sit there, I don't know, I sit watching stuff online and just it's just restless. You know what I mean? I can't sort of relax. I'm not kind of in my, I'm not in my own place, or I'm in my bed by myself. And yeah, there never is. It's not, you're never your own bed. I try and make it as normal as possible. I take my pillow with me when I go. I take stuff with me to try and make it as normal as possible. But yeah, I think it's trying to use, I always used to try and use the time wisely and sit there writing or doing something on emails or whatever. And I just think, actually, I need to shut off because it means when I'm traveling, I am actually, I'm on the train working, or I'm in a car taking calls, and then I'm working when I get there because we normally do an event or something, and then I get back to the hotel and then I'm working even more, and I'm just, and that's not good either. You know, I think you do have to take some time out, but when you're alone, you got a lot of time with your thoughts as well, haven't you? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's harder, I guess, when you are alone for to have any distractions. I think your thoughts do become a lot louder because you literally are, there's nowhere to go, no one to see, no one to talk to. And I think it's in those moments, especially if you're feeling disconnected from home, away, that can make you feel a bit sadder as well. I think those are the moments where it's harder to sort of block out those kind of thoughts.
Yeah, and the other option is go out and get pissed with your mates who are about if there's anyone around, and that's not great either. So I think it's just weird. It's just weird. You go, like, recently I was in Dublin. I did this like a keynote speech, and I was a speaker. I did a workshop, and you know, there was a couple of thousand people there, and you know, we finished, and the bar, and everyone's like, "Oh, you were amazing!" And we're talking about this, and let's talk about the charity, let's talk about mental health, let's talk about, blah, blah, blah. And then it's just like, gone and by yourself then. It's like, it's such a weird like 180 from having all these amazing conversations with people and people wanting to talk to you, like, oh, now I'm by myself, I don't know anyone, I'm just like sat here. Yeah, so it is really weird on your, it's very, you know, life is a roller coaster and all that, very, but peaks and troughs of you know. And I think even with, since I started working with the charity full-time, it's very much, it's like, yeah, compared to working in the salon, I'd go to get up, I'd go to the gym, I would come home, have breakfast, I'd have a full day in the salon, I could see who's coming in, you know, people are coming to see us, we're engaging with loads of people, and then you go home and you have dinner, and, you know, very kind of like steady, like, you know what's coming. Whereas now it's, you know, my days are so varied, it's like, we're, you know, and then one day we'll have this amazing, you know, opportunity with a big brand, or, you know, some, it's just amazing opportunity. It's like, yes, it's going to happen, and then it doesn't happen, and then something really bad happens, and then you lose a friend to suicide, and then you, and then you're trying to do this, and then it's just, it's constantly like up and down, very, very much so, peaks and troughs, but the highs are amazing, and it's just trying to become more resilient to the bad things or the bad times. And I think you kind of, some of the people who work with us, like, oh my God, that's so exciting. You're not excited. I'm like, well, I'm not excited until it actually happens.
Oh, mate, yeah.
You know?
God.
Yeah. Because there's so many people telling me, oh, we want to work with you. We want to do this. We want to support a charity. We're going to donate this much money. We want to help sustainable. And then this and no. And then, so I was very much trying to focus on the present and now rather than what could happen or what may happen or what hasn't happened.
Oh, it's so important to do that because, I think Jim and I, we were both kind of nodding away there because, you know, we know that very well from being creative freelancers, you know, how much, so much more no's and things don't happen than the ones that do happen. And, but you just got to make sure you enjoy the ones that do. And like you say, be better at dealing with the ones that when, you know, when things don't happen and stuff. Just going back to like the idea of like, you know, when being in the bar, you know, being a barber and obviously having conversations with people. Now, I think, you know, I probably speak for quite a few people who go to the hairdressers or the barbers and they sometimes find those conversations awkward. But obviously it's also an opportunity to open up with people that, you know, how we can all say that sometimes it's easier to talk to strangers. Obviously this probably was the kind of led you onto this journey around mental health and stuff. I know there's probably other things as well, but tell us a bit about having those conversations from your side of it. Cause obviously being a customer in a barber shop or having your hair cut, it's quite an intimate thing. You know, you've got someone doing stuff to your hair and then, you know, often it's just shooting the shit to start with, but you do tend to get into sometimes deeper conversations. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, look, when I first started at Tony and Guy, my manager said to me, you are, be prepared to be a therapist as well as a hairdresser. And I just like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm just here because I can get away with having a mohawk and it's quite good fun and it's pretty cool. And yeah, you know, and look, I think it's very quickly, very early on, I realized it was going to be a, yeah, this was going to be a thing. And he wasn't lying. There was people, you know, sat in my chair. I was mostly women back then telling me about the menopause or miscarriages or divorces, affairs, you know, their kids or whatever it may be. And I just think for our clients, we are their hairdresser. We're your barber. And you only ever have that, like we're yours. And people do get quite possessive and, you know, quite sort of funny. One guy came up to me at the gym this morning and said, oh, my barber's divorcing me. He's going off to Australia. I'm really pissed off. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right. So he said, do you know anyone else that can cut hair locally? Well, anyway, but people take it very personally with it's we're yours. But the fact is, you know, that day I see you and I see another 10, 12 people. And it's a very varied day. It's a very, you know, I always say we're a bit like a social chameleon. We evolve to whoever's in our chair. We stay ourselves, but we evolve to whoever's in the chair. And I think it's, you know, how much you can get away with talking about certain things with certain people. And, you know, I would say some people think I'm a respectful, you know, member of society and others know the real me, but you know, it's a, but you know, you'd have people in your chair, you know, everything from like, you have like, just like the local postman to a detective to I don't know, someone who works at Tesco, someone who's a lawyer, someone who's a drug dealer, someone who's a, and they just come in. It's such a varied group of people and it's a really interesting conversation. You do spend a lot of time listening to people as well. And I think that was something, I think you have to be, as an industry, you have to be emotionally intelligent. You have to be empathetic. You have to, you know, you have this amazing license to touch where you're very intimate with people. And especially as men, we don't, I mean, how many people touch your head or your hair or your neck? Or it's not many, it's lovers and mothers is normally the people that have that privilege. And I think that we are, as an industry, very undervalued in the sense that, you know, our job is to potentially cut or color hair. And that's our skilled trade. That's what we do. But on top of that, which isn't our job or we're not trained to do, we listen, we engage, we entertain, we, you know, we have these conversations with people every single day, multiple times. And there's not many other jobs where you'd be, you know, you're not going to be trained to be an engineer and all of a sudden, oh, by the way, whilst you're doing that, you've got to entertain your client who's asked you to rebuild the engine or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not expected of anyone else. I mean, and we're just, and I just don't think that the value of the industry is celebrated enough. In the sense that, you know, so many people within the industry as well say, I'm just a barber, I'm just a hairdresser, and don't really see it as a positive thing to be part of that industry when it really should be.
Yeah, I completely agree. And there is something really intimate about that time. And depending on who you've got, you could really open up to them. I find the same thing with my personal trainer, actually. He's very good at that as well. He's very personable and, again, sees 10 people a day. And I know that I can... We've had some really deep conversations, actually, me and my personal trainer, which is really nice. As sort of two young guys, really, probably doesn't happen very often. So, yeah, but also the thing that I could think about cutting hair is it's such a needed profession. Everybody needs a haircut. You know, even someone growing their hair out needs their hair tended to or looked after and stuff. It is, I think it's really unfair if anybody is talking down about the profession, because it's a really needed and required service forever. You know, everyone's going to need it forever. So I think not just the mental health aspect of the conversations, just the fact that it's just the thing that everyone needs. I think it should be completely celebrated.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's for too long it's been not seen as a like my personal experience is going into hairdressing and being told I was letting the side down by not going to university. I think it just, you know, why not celebrate that? Mm-hmm. But doing something you want to do. I think that, yeah, as an industry, and this leads into the charity side of things, what we do as well. I think that, you know, who's looking after the hair industry as well? Who's listening after, you know, who's listening to the listeners? Who, for example, if you're a Samaritan, you have to offload before you finish your shift. You're not allowed to leave without offloading or having a debrief. If you're a therapist, you have to have a therapist and so on and so forth, psychiatrist, whatever. There's that supervision there. But as a hairdresser or barber, you go listen to everyone else's shit all day and then go home and your partner says, or your friends or housemates, how's your day? Oh, I don't want to talk about it. I'm all talked out. I've been talking all day. Yeah. And you just carry it all around with you. And I think there's, you know, and as a industry, we're reaching the unreachable. We're reaching the entire nation, essentially. And I do think if we can look after the hair and beauty industry, they could potentially help look after the nation, because I'm going to go with a statistic here, but 72% of people who end their life have had no contact with mental health services in the 12 months before they die. But they've probably had a haircut or a beauty treatment.
Yeah.
And if we can capture them in that moment, we can pass them on to those resources. Not trying to turn hairdressers and barbers into therapists or doctors, or, you know, not there to prescribe and diagnose, but we do have those conversations and people talk to us whether we like it or not. So preparing the hair and beauty industry and looking after them means that they can help the people that they see in those communities that aren't reaching out and getting support.
Yeah, that's a really powerful thing to say, and not something... You know, I'd be honest, it's not something I've thought about really, but, you know, like you say, you are taking on a massive emotional burden every day when you're going into work, because you're hearing and people are downloading on you. So how does that work with regards to what you do now in the charity? Is that something you're trying to instill in the industry more? Tell us a bit more about what your work with that.
I think it's the charity itself. It started when I lost a friend to suicide. I was completely unaware that he was struggling. We were big friends because we both love wrestling, actually. And we used to watch wrestling together. And I was completely unaware that he was struggling. He took his life. And I wanted to do something about it. I got a group of barbers together to do like a catalogue of men's haircut images, which would be in barbershops with signposting to mental health and what have you. And then I had a conversation with a friend of mine just as this was starting. And he said to me that he was struggling and he was going through a really tough time. And mostly I just listened, but he actually went to end his life. And he said he was sat in his car and he thought about what we had the conversation around. I'd said it was okay to seek help and there was help out there. And that was literally enough for him to change his mind, not take his life, go and seek help and start his journey to recovery. And I'm very happy to say he's still alive now. He's got a little boy, he's married, he's got his own house, got his own business and all that. And I just, at that point, I thought, well, if that conversation I had in the chair could save a life, then how many other hairdressers and barbers around the world are doing that and having that, and not even realizing the power of that conversation they're having with people? So I went on and did loads of training, trying to find answers, really, mental health, first aid, suicide assist, safe talk, or everything I could get my hands on, and tried to get barbers and hairdressers to come and do it, but they weren't very engaged with it. It was very difficult to get them on board. So I created personally Barber Talk training, which is around how to have those conversations safely with confidence. So it's based around four pillars of how to recognize the signs someone's struggling, not diagnose, just how if someone's struggling with something. How to ask questions well and what kind of questions to ask. Most importantly, how to listen with empathy and without judgment. And then finally, how to help that person find the help they need. So not, you know, become doctors or therapists, as I said a minute ago, but bridge that gap between the communities we're serving and the resources available. that's something that is, I think, it's really important. And we can all do that. And that's what that poster there for that book, How to Listen So Men Will Talk, was about, my last book. How can we take those four pillars into our life generally? Because I think we're very much we're telling people to talk all the time. There's so many campaigns everywhere. But do we really know how to respond well and listen if someone does open up? Because if someone opens up to you and you shut them down with a poor choice of words, like, man up, we need you to be strong, come on, there's loads of people worse off than you, you're going to shut them down. They're probably never going to talk to anyone again. So I think, great, we're getting people to talk, but we really need to focus on the listening and responding well. So that's the training side of things. And then the charity itself, we're doing loads of awareness to speak at industry events. And one of the best things that I love doing is doing a lot of pop-up safe spaces. So pop-up barbershops across salon, where we go to different venues and use the vehicle of a haircut to open up conversations around mental health, and found it really engaging, doing a lot of stuff with construction. We were on a site on the A303 where they're widening it and turning it into a dual carriageway at the moment, just outside the Oval, cutting hair for the guys on the construction site and getting them in, because suicide, construction has the highest rate of suicide of any industry at 2 a day.
Wow.
So we can go along and offer a free haircut, which gets them engaged. Blokes will come and sit down, have a haircut, and then we start the conversation around mental health and try and connect them in with the in-house support that's available to them. And we've just had some phenomenal responses to that. But I think the beauty of what we do with a haircut is that, like you said, everyone needs a haircut. Most people love it. It's a nice experience. We can go to any space, whether we were at festivals, construction sites, corporates, sporting events, and people will come and engage with us because they want a haircut, or they think it's weird what's going on here. They come and talk to us. So we're very lucky that we can go and infiltrate most spaces to get this conversation started, which gives us a unique, or USP, I suppose, of doing this well, compared to potentially some other charities that are just somebody stood with some leaflets.
Yeah.
And we tend to avoid people like that, don't we? And I think that sometimes the title of mental health charity, people don't want to be seen talking to them because they're fearful of what other people think about them if they are, which most people are too busy in their own heads to worry about what anyone else is doing. But by doing haircuts, we can get people, we get half an hour with people.
Yeah.
There's not many charities that get that half an hour one-to-one audience with somebody to engage with them. We're very lucky we do.
Yeah, and you can't kind of leave if you're halfway through, unless you want quite a drastic haircut.
Captive audience.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I should do stand-up with hair to if you're having haircuts. That's a great idea.
That's amazing. I'm fascinated by the that statistic about construction workers.
Yeah.
What do you know what the kind of background is to that? Why that is?
From experience of being on a lot of construction sites this year, and I think that there's a lot of them are freelance, there's not secure jobs, they go from one job to the other. Mm-hmm. Jobs finish early or finish late, which means they miss other opportunities. Yeah. They're often working away from family, living in hotels.
Yeah.
There were some people living in a site, living in tents in London near a site in the week.
Grim,
and and I think it's been like blokes, all blokes together, and there's this banter thing, which is potentially just bullying most of the time. And some of the stories I've heard are just awful, the way they're treating some of these young lot that have come through. I think things are definitely getting better, but I just think again, it's just being alone, away from home, family, drinking, drugs, loss of jobs. I just think there's a lot of things that all kind of combine to make one.
Yeah, it's a vicious cocktail. I was going to say, I don't think that's a phrase, but lots of things coming together. Well, I just invented a phrase there on the podcast. I think it's amazing the work you're doing, and having that half hour haircut as a kind of introduction, because I think for a lot of people, especially bloke, it's that first chat that's really overwhelming and daunting. And actually, once you have that first chat and you realize it can be a really empowering, safe thing, I think it's easier to lead on to then maybe seeing a therapist or whatever, and more kind of continued work. But that first chat is really difficult. But I think it's really important what you said about how to respond and how to listen, because actually, even sometimes it's not even saying anything, just listening.
Active listening.
And even just saying, I'm really sorry, mate, that sounds shit. That can often be enough just so that someone feels heard. Often maybe even need the actual advice or help. That can come later down the line from a professional. Mm. But I think with your mate, just someone going, mate, I'm so sorry, that sounds awful. You must be feel like shit. God, I mean, that can be enough, I think. And so learning, I think, you're so right about some messages about it's good to talk, but I actually think it's really good to listen. And learn how to listen well, I think, can almost be as important.
Yeah, 100%. It's when we're telling men, I think it's very confusing for guys, especially because we're telling men to be vulnerable. We're telling men to open up. But when they do, it's like, they get shut down and, we need you to be strong. Just because I think we're not really comfortable yet with men being vulnerable. And I don't think people are doing it to be mean or being harsh on their mates, or they just panic and think, oh, I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know what to do. And even if you just say that, say, look, thanks for telling me, but I don't really know what to say, but I'm here to listen. And it sounds like you're going through a lot. Tell me, you know. And I think that's the biggest thing I've done in the whole journey of Lions Bible Collective from inception right through to now is just I've publicly told people for the last God knows how many years it's okay to talk to me, whether that's been through podcasts, whether that's been on stage, TV, radio, whatever form that's gone out in. And recently I went out with a friend of mine who just moved back from London, and he's been in London for years, and now I'm in London all the time and he's moved down here. But we went out, I said, let's go out for a drink and catch up. And in that night, five times when I was either going to the toilet or going to the bar, people I'd never met before said to me, you're the guy that does the mental health stuff, aren't you? I'm like, yeah. And they go, well, I'm going through this, and just offloaded on me completely random people in the middle. And I mean, this is in my local town, so people obviously know who I am or what, of me. And I just, I'm a 6'3", 20 stone tattooed bloke, I'm not the normal person that you'd imagine people opening up to, but all I've done is let them know that it's a safe space to do that. I felt sorry for my mate because he was sat by himself all night, but and that's just really powerful, isn't it? Just letting people know it's okay and you're a safe space, because we've all gone through something. We all have mental health. I think we need to smash that sort of preconception that mental health is a clinically diagnosed problem that happens to other people over there, whereas we're perfectly aware that physical health is a moving scale and we all have it, whether it's a runny nose and a sore throat to a migraine to heart attacks and cancer, and we're all on that scale. And I think we just need to realize that we're all on the mental health scale. We all suffer loss, we all need to love and be loved, we've all been let down, disappointed, or all that is our mental health working. And I think being aware of that and being able to deal with it and help ourselves get out of it is really important. Like with our physical health, we know what we need to do to keep ourselves physically well, and if we're ill, how to get better again. Mm. Whether we do it or not, we're all pretty much aware of it. But do we really know how to do that with our mental well-being as well? And I think there's that phrase, it's okay not to be okay. And I think it is okay not to be okay, but it's not okay to stay not okay. Mm. And I think that's what we need to work on, like educating people on how to be better mentally and of our well-being. I mean, myself included, we're all learning all the time, but it is a very vital thing.
Well, I was going to say, actually, because you are taking on a lot of these emotions and these stories and a lot of people's issues and challenges. Are you good at doing self-care for you? Are you good at compartmentalizing some of that stuff and actually working on stuff yourself? Because I guess that is a lot to take on.
No, I'm absolutely fucked. No, it's look, it is a constant.
And now I want to talk about it, guys.
Right, so
point one.
Active audience. No, look, I think it is one of those things that I've had to evolve. Before I started mental health charity, I didn't have any problems with my mental health, ironically. So it's a case of learning, evolving, having good people around me. Also build up resilience to things as well. You have to, I've lost people to suicide. I've lost people to suicide since we've been doing this, and I think I will probably be around people who do end their life. And I think someone said to me when I first started from public health, you will, the more you're involved with this, the more you're going to lose people, the more people you're going to be around with mental health issues, because you're surrounding yourself in that world. So yeah, you do have to build resilience. You do have to realize when to say no, when to, you know, when to engage, when not to engage. And it's okay to look after yourself. It's okay to, you know, that's something I've realized again, like I said, you know, earlier on, I turn off my phone. I don't, you know, look at messages really after 5:30 when I finish work. I try and, you know, try and stay within a certain time period when I'm working on that and try and be present in the moment. When I'm with my family, try and spend time with my family. And when I'm at work, try and be at work rather than thinking about the other when I'm in the opposite place. But building up a good support network is vital, and being aware of what's available, even if you don't have to use it, being aware of what is available is really important. Because I think there's a common misconception that there's nothing out there for anybody, when in fact there's so many amazing small charities, there's big organisations, there is resources available.
There is, and there's loads. And if one doesn't work for you, you can try another.
Yeah.
Like, same as therapists. Yeah. If you go and see a therapist and you think, I don't get on this person, that doesn't mean don't see a therapist. No. You can try another one.
Exactly that. Everyone's different. You know, for some people it's medication, they're fine. Some people it's medication and support group. Some people it's, you know, it's medication, support group, and talking therapy. And I think it's a complete mixture of all of them. And I think there's something that's really important, which is the 5 steps to well-being, which I encourage anybody to look at. It's like, you can find it online, it's on the NHS websites, it's everywhere. But it's about those ways of keeping yourself mentally well. So the 5 steps of well-being are: connect with others, be physically active, learn new skills, give to others, and be present. And those 5 things are completely different for everybody. Like, how you like to connect with others may be different from me. Being physically active, like I said earlier on, I get up at 5 a.m. and I love going to the gym. I love going to the gym, lifting weights, doing a bit of cardio. I sometimes do a little bit of yoga. I did a lot in lockdown for that. But, you know, other people, it's going for a run. For me, going for a run would not be good for my mental health, because I hate running and I probably wouldn't go and I'd feel guilty for not going. So, you know, it's not my thing. And I think those 5 steps to mental well-being are quite a good starting point for us to look at and try and ensure that we're doing those things regularly, whether it's connecting with others through phone calls, going out on a sesh or coffee with a friend or whatever it is. Just make sure that you don't, when you start seeing those 5 things teetering off one of them, then you know that you need to perhaps step it up a little bit.
Yeah, it's really important, actually, and it's something we'll try and put in the show notes as well, maybe a link to those 5 steps of well-being. Because yeah, I've been doing kind of stuff around authenticity codes and stuff recently with a friend, and when you actually start to reflect on the things that actually make you feel good about yourself and the things that that you know you want to get out of life, a lot of those things rooted in, you know, back in the day when you were a kid. And a lot of them are those basic steps of well-being, you know, exercise, seeing people, connecting, listening, you know, those very, very basic kind of things. And I think it's really important for us to kind of, yeah, even if you just write them down and have a think about them for a while.
Yeah.
And figure out what ones work for you. You know, it might take you a while to work those things out, but yeah, really vital to have those long term.
Well, I think things, a lot of things try to overcomplicate stuff. There's a lot of overcomplicated stuff. There's a lot of things in mental health that are very, aren't that inclusive. It's very, yeah, I've done a few things where I've done these mental health festivals and I've spoken at it, and it's very, middle-aged, middle-class women in a field meditating together and Tibetan chimes and all this stuff. And like, that doesn't have to be, that's fine, but it doesn't have to be mental health. It's accessible for everybody. And I think, you know, when we talk about things like being present, people often go into mindfulness and meditation, and yes, that is being present, but that's not okay. That's not, doesn't fit for everybody. Like, meditation is quite hard to do. People find the time to do it or trying to learn to do it, and the sort of misconceptions of what it may be as well. One of my things that I always suggest to people that I love doing is I like going to the cinema, because I turn my phone off and I'm not in, and you know, I'm watching that film. I'm in that story for the next 2 to 3 hours, and I'm just totally present, engaged with it. Whereas if I'm at home watching a film, I've got the kids jumping on my head, I've got being asked to do something, being pulled from pillar to post, I'm on my emails at the same time, or I'm doing, you know, I'm not present in that moment. So it can be things like that. It doesn't have to be, you know, going off to a retreat and not speaking and jumping in ice cold water with Wim Hof. It doesn't have to be that. I mean, that's fine as well. Like, Yeah, cold showers and cold water therapy, yes. But
yeah,
do you think what works for you?
Yeah, I think that is like because people, I wonder if it's because people desire radical change. It's not like the baby steps kind of thing. We want radical change. And so we want it now. And so we do radical things. So like, yeah, like you say, go in ice water, you know, and then that's the sort of thing that, you know, some you might keep up. But I guess for some people, they probably do it a couple of times and then they don't never do it again.
There's social media trends as well, isn't there? Like, I want to post that I'm doing this or I'm doing that, whatever. Definitely. And it's not that, you know, not that big a deal to go, I'm going to the cinema. But, you know, I think even like the learn new skills part, you talk about radical change. People go, right, I'm going to learn Spanish or I'm going to learn to play guitar or I'm going to learn to. And it's, you know, unrealistic goals because you've got a full life anyway. And how are you going to fit in this time to? And it's a long-term thing, but we never sort of take, you know, it's taking the little things. I learned how to, I don't know, I normally buy a lasagna, but I made a lasagna.
Yeah.
I learned something. I never undervalue those little successes or those little goals or they're, yeah, even just learning how to do something on, you know, share my screen on Zoom. Yeah. I learned how to do that. Yeah. Whatever it may be.
I learned how to, did some work in our house and got a bathroom put in. We've got one of those like upright radiator things, heated towel rail kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I learned the other day how to, the top of it was getting cold, how to bleed it. I've never bled a radiator before and I learned how to do that. And
amazing.
I felt really proud of myself.
You feel like a real dad now.
Yeah.
A proper dad.
He's going around doing all the radiators.
Yeah.
Go around to other people's houses. I think that might need bleeding.
They don't even need them. Yeah. Yeah,
there's no water in the system left at all.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all gone.
It's just air. It's all air.
Yeah.
You're so right, though. We don't have to. I think you're, again, it's what we said, that radical. People say, like, I need to change my life overnight. And I've learned to play the violin or something. And actually, that, which is, like you say, is fine. But just doing some very basic kind of changes, maybe trying a new recipe or, like you say, just watching a new film or something. And I think you're so right about the cinema. Something I've gone back to doing recently more of, because I haven't been to the cinema, like kind of, yeah, I suppose having the kids and stuff, we only went to the cinema to watch, you know, like Playmobil movie and rubbish like that. whereas, you know, I've started going with a mate and we've been seeing some really good films and stuff at a local indie cinema.
Cool.
And it's just so true. Relax, put the phone away, you know, and even if the phone feels shit, you're still kind of engaged for those couple of hours. Yeah. And
but that's a couple of those things. Though. You're watching something, so you're watching that film, so you're being present, but you're also connecting with somebody as well.
Yeah.
And that's so you're combining those things. And I think one of the other things is if you can combine as many of them as possible, like even more power to it. You know, I think like give to others is one of them. When I talk about that, people, when I say, what do you think you ask people? What do you think you could do to give to others? And they're like, oh, well, I could get them this, or I could, talk about the gifts and money a lot of the time. But actually, you know, just there's so many different ways which you can give. And one of the things I do, I've got an alarm that goes off my phone about 9:30-ish on a Monday morning. It just says, text someone. And it just prompts me just to give a text on a Monday morning after everyone's just started the work week and just go, I don't know, either someone I love, I haven't told them I loved them for a while, or I've seen something fantastic online that somebody's doing, I'll celebrate them by saying, I've just seen you're doing this, or just reach out to someone I haven't spoken to for a while. And it's amazing the responses you get back. I mean, it makes you feel good as well, but it's amazing the responses you get back. And even some people within the hair industry that I've sent these messages out to who look like they're completely smashing life and doing amazing stuff on social media. And they've come back going, I really needed that today. Yeah, thank you so much. I've had a rough couple of weeks and they go, I would never have known. But yeah, and I think we just assume that everyone's having such a fucking fantastic time all the time because that's what they put out there. And actually, reality of it is we've all got stuff going on, and just by, and that's something anyone can do, send a couple of text messages out on a Monday morning.
Oh yeah, it's something
that's
I
such
do.
A good idea.
Yeah, I do that all the time. Like just randomly send people like a little like check in, and you're so right. People, so many times people get back and say, oh man, I really needed that today, you know. And then you start a dialogue and, you know, it's a chance for someone to sort of download. And yeah, it's really vital to do that, I think, and do it on a regular basis is, I think, is important as well, because again, it's one of those things where you might do it once and never do it again.
Yeah, it's really, that's, I mean, it's really nice to have that tangible advice. I think a lot of people listen to these pods and agree with stuff, but I think rounding off with a bit of tangible advice people can use that's really straightforward and easy, I think is brilliant. So thank you for sharing that, because I think that's genuinely something that our listeners can try and take into their own lives, which is great. And thanks for sharing your story as well. I mean, you're doing such great work and really appreciate it. We're going to put links in the show notes as well to all the stuff you do as well, so that if anyone's interested in anything today, they can get in contact.
And you could do a live podcast for the Back Second Crack if you want.
yeah, let's do that. That'll sell thousands of tickets. Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, Tom, thank you so much. Thank you, man. It's been brilliant. And so many takeaways. And I think lots of people will get a lot out of this episode. So thank you so much.
Thank you both for having me. It's been absolutely brilliant. What a great end to the week.
Black Podcast, what a lovely guy. Could talk to him for absolutely ages, and doing some really important stuff in the world of mental health as well. If you've heard anything tonight and you think you might be interested with anything Tom's doing, we will put links below in the show notes, so click on those and follow him and check him out, because he is a top bloke doing some great things, particularly in the world of men's mental health. So yeah, top bloke. And I feel like I've learned a bit more about wrestling today as well. So always nice to learn things from an episode, Giles. And I think today was one of those episodes.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, Tom's just a great dude. And it was really great to talk to him and hear about all the work he's doing. And, you know, obviously he's become a mental health first aider, and just getting the idea around to other people in the beauty industry to consider these deep and meaningful chats they have with people on a day-to-day basis. And, yeah, it's amazing work he's doing. And, we all need someone to talk to sometimes. And often that can be, you know, a stranger in a hairdresser's, or, you know, the postman, or, like, someone you buy coffee from. And, you know, it's just they're all skills that we could all benefit from, aren't they? So yeah, it's good to talk, as Bob Hoskins once said. And it really is. And, you know, like I say, they're doing an important job. And you know, it's one of those things that people, it might be that, you know, that point of contact that people have on a regular basis that they really need. And so yeah, so it's great what he's doing.
My postman the other day asked me if I played for Palace.
Really?
Yeah, he got confused.
So you actually played for Crystal Palace?
Mm.
What, now?
I took it as a compliment. That he's met me before, knows my name. Mm. But I think he knew I was involved at Palace, but didn't know how. But the fact that he looked at me and thought, that's the body of a professional Premier League athlete, I'm taking it as a
Neil
big compliment.
Shipley.
Because it's definitely not. But that was nice.
That was nice.
Closest I've ever come to becoming a professional footballer.
Man, that's nice that he thought that you were still playing as well.
Yeah, at 38. Yeah.
You could have bullshitted your way through that, though.
James Milner.
Got a game at the weekend, Brighton.
No, it's because it's... Oh, I could have done, actually. It's because his sons... I think he's an Arsenal fan, but his sons are Palace fans. And so they know me through that. But he was confused as to how they might know me. Thought maybe because I was a player, but there we go. But yeah, I should have actually, you're right, I should have just run with it and seen if I can get some free post. It already is free, so what am I going to get from him? Nothing.
There's no real bonus to, like, getting on the good side of the postman, the milkman. You get some freebies, but
well, I guess it means my post will come more often. My post won't be delayed, you know, it'll go missing. Although it still does, actually. Anyway, that was a highlight of my week. Playing Palace for 5 seconds.
It's great, mate. You should hold on to that.
I might do. Anyway, I think we should wrap up, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Really. And then when we come back next week, it's Pod 200.
I know, that's crazy, man. 200 podcasts.
Is it too many podcasts?
No. How many have you done of FYP? It's probably about 400 or 500 by now.
We've done nearly 500. Yeah, I'm starting to think it's too many. I'm starting to think we're going to hit 500 this year, and I think it is. I think 500 of anything is enough.
Mm.
You know, the Proclaimers thought, let's write a song about walking the farthest distance we could think of.
Yeah.
And they went 500 miles.
Well, we've still got 300 more to go then.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. Anyway, on the next 300, starting with Robbie Fowler.
Yeah, hopefully. I'll give him a ring. All right. Now.
We'll get on to give him a ring and see what God's up to. Anyway, I'm going to go and sleep.
Good idea.
I hope our listeners have a great week. I hope you have a great week too, Giles.
And you, Jim. And remember, there's one thing you've got to remember. Don't get cancelled.